We have a very distinguished panel here today, and we are particularly happy to have chairing the panel, Arun Sarapan, who, as you know, is with the Senate Armed Services Committee, except that he moved to DARPA, where he took up a position. But since then, he's moved to OSTP. I believe you're ensconced in OSTP for at least the rest of the day. So we look forward to having his perspective, who has draws on a deep knowledge of innovation policy in the United States and SBR in particular. We're very pleased to have him here. Arun.
Thank you, Chuck. We have a tough assignment given how well that last panel went, but I think that this set of program managers from civilian agencies have an equally interesting set of innovation challenges facing their missions, and I think equally interesting perspectives on how they're making use of the SBIR program to address those innovation challenges, so at least I hope you do. As a former Hill staffer, I worked a lot with Kevin Wheeler and others on reauthorization efforts that were not completely successful to this point, but this meeting is occurring at a very good time to help inform those discussions. So I'd hope the panelists, as they talk about their innovation challenges and the use of SBIR programs and similar programs to address those challenges, keep in mind that this is an opportunity to, within your constraints, provide feedback to the congressional side of things and the executive side of things about what's working and what's not working. There's certainly a set of things that can be corrected by changes to statute, and those should be elevated to discussion. But there are also a larger, I think, set of things that would fall into the world of what Chuck would call just do it, where we have all the authority in the world already, and we're not capable of bringing ourselves, and my pronoun usage is correct at this point, bringing ourselves in the executive branch to make use of those authorities. And so highlighting where you see that those opportunities or challenges might be an interesting way to go with this discussion, and afterwards we'll be glad to take questions. And in the interest of protecting my ignorance and their reputations, I'll let them introduce themselves before they speak.
Thanks. I'm Rick Howard. I'm the acting deputy chief technologist for the new agency, for the new organization at NASA, which is stood up as part of the 11 budget, president's budget, and acting soon to be official, but they haven't made that announcement yet. And I was going to talk about the SBIR, but more broadly, the new innovation activities going on in space technology at NASA that are all tied up with activities we're going to be doing anyway, and then the ones that are tied up with the 11 budget. So I think we can push this one way or the other. We'll see what happens. No, there we go. Okay. There's a pointer on here too. The red button at the top. Okay. Yes, it actually works. All right. Okay. So the SBIR program at NASA is on the move in numbers of ways, both programmatically and physically and. This is all, and I noticed I just have a typo right away on the first chart, 2011. Starting in 2011, the SBIR and the STT program are being integrated into the new Office of the Chief Technologist. This takes it out of a sort of standalone program and integrates it into a much bigger office with a space technology program to it that covers all TRL levels. And all areas of technology, a lot of which have been at NASA a long time ago and have disappeared and gone away and are coming back as main elements. And this is going to provide some opportunities for bridging that valley of death and moving on from SBIR ones and twos into other opportunities. And addressing some of the concerns that I heard earlier with the questions having to do with, where's the home for far out advanced concepts? Well, I'll get to that. So the program, the SBIR program, the goals remain the same as they have been. They haven't changed. What is happening is the space technology program will increase the opportunities for SBIR to continue to mature over this valley of death. And this I'll talk about more about that later on. In addition to which, with this increased program for technology, there will be an increase in the areas that we do extramural R&D. And so as we go through evaluating this, as every agency does on an annual basis, that will increase the allocation for SBIR itself. So that's also going to be, we fully expect that to be increased, not staying stable or decreasing at all with the new program. The administrator, Charlie Bolden, on I think it was the day after the budget rollout, so that was sometime in early February, created the office of the chief technologist with a chief technologist who is Bobby Braun, who is the chief technologist for the agency and this office, and we've been staffing up and starting that office since that time and getting ready for and planning for the FY11 proposed budget of for space technology. The roles, the main roles that we have in the office are mainly six areas. Bobby Braun, as chief technologist, is the principal advisor to the administrator on all areas having to do with technology. That's across the entire agency, not just within the program that we have, the space technology element, but also the technologies that are going on in the mission directorates. And as part of being responsible for that, we're going to take an assessment of what technology actually is going on across the agency. And that's and produce a portfolio, or which will eventually lead to a roadmap. So the second bullet is that portfolio that we're working on and assessing the areas across the agency. The third, I'll talk more about this one, which is the direct management of the space technology program. The fourth point there is really this roadmap activity. Now, you know, the first three of those, four of these elements, with the exception of the management of the space technology program, is something that this office is going to do no matter what the budget is that we get in 11. We need to have this. We need to be able to have that point of contact. We need to be able to develop that portfolio and develop those roadmaps. The roadmaps we're actually starting to work on this summer. This will be, again, across the investments, across the agency. Major point that we've talked about and has been emphasized both in the administration as well as by Charlie Bolden, the administrator, is that we need to get back to an area where we're not afraid to take risks. We've gotten to the point where risk is a dirty word, and failure is a dirty word, and that's just not acceptable if you're trying to do innovative, out-of-the-box, creative ideas and try and mature things that have significant impact to new ways of approaching your missions, your mission designs, and ways to get our missions accomplished. And that has to require being able to take high risk, high payoff opportunities and proceed forward those, and when they don't work out, they don't work out. You move on to something else. The note at the bottom, the footnote at the bottom, I want to draw attention to. Mission directorates, one thing that we're doing in this program is the mission directorates will continue to manage their focused technology activities that they are doing as they have been for the last number of years. We're not redirecting them to do things. We just need to know what they're doing, and then we're going looking at things that are cross division, cross agency, cross with, you know, multi-purpose, whether it's industry, academia, or other government agencies. So this is an interesting little roadmap here that we've got developed, and it actually takes a little bit of time to think about this. If you see the main blue line funnel up here, right, one can think of the things inside of that as things that we're going to be doing within the space technology program at NASA, which have a way of proceeding from concepts, early ideas, to a little bit more maturity, a little bit more investment, a little bit more higher up on the TRL level scale, and then ultimately get to the point where they need to be infused. I mean, I look at this entire flow as being, look, we're trying to stimulate innovation, mature those technologies, and infuse them into missions. And I think a key, and this is a key with the SBIR program, is if it doesn't get infused, or it doesn't get commercialized, doesn't get infused into missions, or find a commercial product, what are we doing it for? So I think that's a very important element. Now, what is also, I think, of importance on here is are the arrows that are outside that those blue lines. So in addition to things that are competitively selected within the space technology program, at each step of the way, there will be opportunities for, through competitive selection, for on-ramps into these other program elements. There are three main program elements in this new program that's been proposed. Early stage, and I've got several charts on this, early stage innovation, which is sort of the low TRL. This is where SBIR, STTR lives. And there's other things in that which will be other opportunities for people that have phase ones or phase twos and look for some other place to take their activity to the next level or other approaches. Game changing is going to be sort of the mid-TRL level activities, a little bit more money, a fewer number of activities, but focusing on the things that are really can make a significant difference in terms of applications to future missions and other and across the agency. Much along the lines of the way DARPA runs. We've looked at this, we've had discussions with them, it's very similar to that. We're going to be looking at that similar sort of approach with a seedling fund activity and then a down select to proposals and short periods of time, reasonable amount of money. It works out great, it moves on to flight demo. If it doesn't, then we redirect and do other things. And again, high risk, high payoff. This is not something we're expecting everything to work on. And then ultimately, the cross-cutting capability demos, this is to look at what technologies need to be demonstrated in space or suborbital or orbital in order to be able to be picked up and infused. And when I mean infused, I don't mean just infused into NASA missions. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, but infused into whatever has been the agreed to plan for if this matures to this level, TRL level 6, Mission X will pick it up and fly it, or an industry will pick it up and fly it. And an element of this, and this has been a problem I think all along, is when you develop that plan and say, oh, this is great, oh, I'll use it, you go off and develop it, I'll use it. We have to have buy-in. I mean, somebody's got to put a little skin in the game in this category. And we're looking at least sort of 25% funding commitment in these projects that are under the cross-cutting flight demo area that will be coming from outside of the Office of Chief Technologist. Other mission directory could put up some money, another agency could, an industry could, and so this is a partnering activity because we want to make sure that when it does get flown and demonstrated, there is a real user that then moves on the next step and uses it. So I've talked a little bit about this. I'm not going to dwell on this chart too much, other than that, again, this is non-mission-focused technology activity in the space technology program, multiple customers, competitive sponsorship in both academia and universities and the NASA centers. At the very bottom, you can see a list of sort of the typical cross-cutting type of technologies that are out there. The list should not surprise anybody. It's been around for years. It's just now that we're actually going to start putting money and activity on this. As I said, there are three main elements to this program, the space technology program. Early stage, listed underneath each of these are really the 10 programs that we actually have that are being proposed in the 11 budget. NIAC 2, okay, so here's an interesting area. This is the area where we restart what was done years ago, but with a broad announcement out to the entire community. It's not, the NASA centers can apply just as well as industry and academia. For phase ones and phase twos, we're talking about doing the same sort of thing, 100K-ish grants for advanced concepts that people can come up with ideas for advanced concepts that focus on future needs, 10 years or out, further out than that, future needs for NASA or NASA and other customers, NASA and national needs, anything that's multiple, the dual use or multiple use. Another area is the research grants. I'm from the Science Mission Directorate, where I've been for the last 20 years at headquarters. As most people know, there's ROSES element, ROSES calls, there's an annual solicitation for grants. This is very similar to that, although it is on technology. So 100, 300K, 1 year, 2 year type of grant activity. This includes in this a fellowship program, which we're going to be doing to stimulate graduate student research and involvement with R&D labs and the NASA centers in doing those research, their research through either summer internships at the center and part of the STEM education activity, and get researchers early fresh outs and researchers through, excited about what NASA and industry is doing in space, and hopefully find connectivity from their research fellows that work at the research fellows with their sponsors at the centers for future work. SBIR and STTR are in this area. So it is now housed within a major program element and not just sort of a standalone as it has been for the last several years. Centennial Challenges is a growth of what currently is a Centennial Challenge program. Center Innovation Fund is a fund which will allow the NASA centers and researchers there, scientists and engineers, to be able to go off and, again, think of new creative ideas, concepts, advanced technology ideas that they want to try and pursue. Strong emphasis on partnering. So here's another opportunity for the SBIR community, whether it's in a phase one, whether they're in a phase one or not, but for that community to say, let's talk to some folks at the NASA Center. Here's an opportunity to partner with them on some innovative ideas that we want to try and proceed forward with a little bit of seed money at the center, and mature that further down, and hopefully have that mature and follow into one of the other areas. Game changing has two main elements. I've already talked about the game changing area. It's mainly going to be projects that are selected competitively. Significant amount of them competitively. The early stage innovation is 100% competed, and I mean competed in a very broad sense. The money that goes to the Center Innovation Fund, that goes to the centers, they're going to have a competition within the center, obviously, to do that. Most of these are broad area announcements and will be openly competed. Game-changing, there will be some directed projects, certainly early on, as we have a list of things that we've been trying to do. Optical comm is one of those areas that we've been working on for years that I think we're going to start as a directed activity. But there will be also a call in that area for open ideas, for game-changing ideas to start those projects. And the cross-cutting capability, as I said, is the flight demo or whatever needs to get us to TRL level 6 and these technologies infused. This is just a chart that sort of summarizes. We're bridging all the TRL levels across the board. Significant competitions, open competitions for on-ramps into each of these three areas. Notice in the cross-cutting capability that 20% cost share. This is the need to get that skin in the game to be able to proceed on and actually put these things into flight missions. This I think is a really good example. This is a ESMD example, but it really illustrates, I think, where we've got this program as a push of starting out with early stage innovation ideas, maturing those, going through game-changing activities, maturing them into higher TRL level, and then finally flight demos, while at the same time we're constantly in contact and discussion with the other mission directorate, with the Exploration System Mission Directorate, to see what they're doing so that we're not doing the same thing on both sides of the hall, and also so understand where their requirements and the activities are that they're doing focused in the mission directorate and how our activities feed into what they're doing and vice versa. So they're continuing with their enabling technologies program, both inputting things into these flagship demos And they've got the pull. They have the requirements. They have the needs for the actual flight missions. We provide some of the push initially. And across the entire flow, increasing technology readiness level and getting to that infusion state. This is the budget that's going into I've got like two charts. So this is the budget that's gone in as part of the 11 president's proposed budget submit. This is a total of $4.9 billion over 5 years, about $3.9 billion of new money for technologies. And you can see the areas. This is all the areas we just talked about and where that's broken down. The SBIR line, as I said, this is all based on what was in the 10 budget and the run out of that. So it doesn't reflect changes in the R&D base and the calculation for the allocations, but we fully expect those numbers to go up. So, in summary, I think there's going to be one more emphasis and awareness and recognition of the SBIR program as a significant element of the overall NASA space technology activity that's going on in the agency. So just the increased awareness and involvement of the SBIR program, I think, will be good. It also folds in completely into the portfolio of the other program elements that are in this, which is critical. And I think there are, in addition to the SBIR program, new opportunities that will be created for either on-ramps into NASA's technology area or moving on beyond phase twos.
Thank you. Dr. Peterson.
Thank you. So I'm Tom Peterson, and I'm the head of the engineering director at the National Science Foundation. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the structure of the NSF. There are 7 directorates and 4 offices. The directorates more or less fall along disciplinary boundaries like engineering or biology or math and physical sciences. And the offices are more cross-cutting or specifically focused on very detailed programs. For example, the Office of Polar Programs, which coordinates our research in the North and the South Pole, and the Office of Integrated Activities, which support more cross-cutting activities. This morning, we heard, I think, some interesting discussion and conversation and banter about whether SBIR is considered a tax or an opportunity to invest. And perhaps those of you that are less familiar with NSF or maybe just superficially familiar with NSF, you might think if ever there was an agency where SBIR would be an outlier, it would be in the National Science Foundation, because after all, NSF is about supporting basic research in science and engineering. But I can tell you that that is absolutely not the case, particularly in the engineering directorate. And in fact, what I'd like to do, while the major focus of this short presentation is SBIR, I want to give you a little bit of background information that shows you how it is an integral part of a broader portfolio that we invest in, focusing on innovation and the development of industrial and commercial interactions. And I think that I can say categorically that if there were not a mandated SBIR program, the engineering directorate would create a program like this, because it is such an integral part of our activities. So let me just remind you that obviously part of the innovation and business development process is to make sure we have people who are predisposed to doing these kinds of things. And so part of our effort is focusing on supporting students and young investigators, trying to support potentially transformative research, as was brought out in some of the questions this morning. Sometimes that can be a challenge. To make sure that the really good ideas that may be more on the fringes are supported, and to provide an avenue to support innovation in translational research as well as basic research. So in terms of supporting young investigators, we have a lot of activities that focus on giving undergraduate students in engineering and the sciences opportunities to work on research projects and internships with industry. We try to bring in teachers to expose them to the opportunities that science and engineering present, and give them materials that they can in turn take back to their classrooms. The Graduate Research Fellowship Program in the National Science Foundation is probably one of the real classical gems of the program in terms of supporting graduate education. These are grants that are given, fellowships that are given directly to students, not to universities, and they're entirely portable. Students basically can use them for research at any institution. And the career awards really support young investigators to help them get their programs started. I apologize. Looks like one of the bullets there got tromped on in the visuals. But I do want to emphasize that in addition to having programs that support what you might consider to be disciplinary research, research in chemical engineering or mechanical engineering and so forth, we do have a program that specifically focuses on supporting emerging frontiers in research and innovation. This is our attempt at providing a venue for high-risk, high-return research. We are not looking for programs that would logically fit in specific disciplines. They are very interdisciplinary in nature. And we look to the community to help define the specific areas that we would focus on. And we move from one year to the next in covering different areas. And then finally, with regard to our contributions to innovation, primarily in engineering, but not just in the engineering directorate at the NSF, we support programs that would not be supported without extensive partnerships between universities, partnerships between universities and industry, partnerships between universities and business development opportunities within regions. And I give as examples the engineering research centers, which have been in existence since 1985. These are multi-institutional centers. There are about 15 or 16 of them currently supported on NSF support, but there are about 30 that have been supported over the years, 30 in addition to those 15 that have graduated. That is, they don't have NSF support, but because of the strength of their partnerships, primarily with industry, they continue to be very strong and active. Industry University Cooperative Research Centers is another example, again, where NSF provides actually financially rather nominal support for the overall center, but the primary support, the large fraction of that support, comes from industry partnerships. So obviously the research areas that are focused on there are industry driven. The Partnership for Innovation program, another program that brings together universities with regional economic development agencies, sometimes community colleges. We have partnerships with tribal colleges. And finally, the Small Business and Innovation Program. And so you can see this is really a part of our portfolio that invests in a broad range of activities. And we've all talked about past year's quadrant or different ways to visualize this chart between discovery and commercialization. And I show this simply to illustrate that whereas the NSF overall support would quite clearly be pretty far on the left-hand side of this chart. Certainly, if you take integration over the entire NSF portfolio, there are many activities, not only the SBIR program, but these engineering research centers or the industry university cooperative research centers that cover the spectrum, that move away from just pure discovery to more applications-oriented activities. But I want to emphasize that it's not just a question of taking these basic discoveries and moving them towards potential commercialization, but this little circle there is meant to represent the fact that in many activities, particularly in the engineering research centers, we find that the partnerships with industry bring back to those centers new basic research ideas that are important to look at in a university environment. So let's talk specifically about the SBIR program. You probably know that the SBIR program started at the National Science Foundation. It was a pilot program in 1977, and it was only at the NSF for 5 years before Congress legislated the SBIR Act in 1982. And it emphasizes the translation of research to achieve technological innovation. So I think we're very proud of the fact that that it did begin at the National Science Foundation. And I'm, as the director of the engineering program where SBIR resides, it's very pleasing for me to see the extent to which our colleagues in SBIR interact with the SBIR programs and all of the agencies. And I think there's a really synergistic interaction that takes place there, and they learn from the different programs. And I know we've hopefully been able to give some advice and counsel in terms of the programs that we've started at NSF to some of the other agencies. The linkages to academics are pretty substantial. About 60% of the programs that are supported by NSF through the SBIR program have a collaboration with the university. Keep in mind now, the NSF is not a potential customer for products that are developed by SBIR, so we're unique in that aspect. We like to think that anyone with a good idea, a good commercial idea, independent of what particular area, would have an opportunity to receive support from SBIR through the NSF. We do have four broad areas that we do try to characterize the SBIR applications into, but that's primarily just for the ease in assembling panels for review. And certainly if there are areas that people have a question about whether they would be entertained by the National Science Foundation, we'd encourage them to contact program officers. We do have IP licensing from universities, the small business, subcontracts to the university. These are all the types of arrangements that are collaborations that exist between the SBIR programs and universities. A quick structure of the SBIR program. I mean, we're all familiar with the Phase 1 and Phase 2 awards. We also have at NSF a Phase 2B award program that matches third-party investment. The extent to which we provide that support depends on the extent of the third-party investment, so it could be relatively small, less than $250,000 for perhaps just a year, or if it exceeds that amount, it would be for up to 2 years. And again, the amount of the support that's provided by NSF is contingent on the amount of support that's provided by third-party investment. We also have a matchmaking program. Someone asked about this earlier on. We do try to provide both support and professional advice in bringing SBIR's Phase 2 awardees, Phase 2B awardees, in contact with potential investors or other large companies. And we think we have been reasonably successful in doing that. Just to give you an example of what's happened in some of our third-party investments, and let me calibrate this just a little bit. We have about $125 or $130 million a year that's invested in the SBIR and STTR program overall. For the Phase 2B third-party investments in 2008 and 2009, you can see between $25 and $50 million of third-party investments were made in the Phase 2 program. And somewhere on the order of 20 different SBIR firms were active in mergers and acquisitions in the 2 years that we've done this analysis. And the question often is raised about, you know, how successful have these companies been? I think the Phase 2 grantees have been reasonably successful in terms of being able to generate revenue, and certainly those that have received additional Phase 2B support have been significantly more successful at getting into the revenue generation phase than those that have not. We are trying to expand these partnerships. As I said, I think we're looking at the SBIR program as sort of the end point or the capstone in a broad spectrum of programs that we're investing in innovation. We have encouraged our engineering research centers and our IUCRC participants to engage small business, not just large business. And in fact, the most recent solicitation in the engineering research centers, which took place just a little over a year ago, the so-called Gen 3 solicitations. There was a specific mechanism in there to support, through supplements, partnerships of these large-scale engineering research centers with the small business program. And you can just see, while in most of the IUCRCs and the ERCs, the member companies are large companies, we do have a reasonable number of small businesses that that are partners in these activities. So that's a very brief summary of the SBIR program at the National Science Foundation. Again, the takeaway message is that we try to provide a home for ideas from small business that would cover the gamut of potential commercial application. We're not specifically focused on a given product or a given application, and we would hope that we'd be the home for just basic good ideas and for potential commercialization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have about 15 minutes, I believe, for questions to get to lunch. I will start with one. As you know, reauthorization is on the table now on the Hill, and evaluation of the program on the executive branch side as well. So let me throw out four major issues of the day, and if any of them interest you and you have comments or suggestions on how we should move forward on them, please take me up on that. There's discussion of award sizes and whether they should be capped or whether they should increase, and how do you feel that will affect your ability to accomplish some of the goals you talked about. There's a discussion of the allocation or tax or set-aside. For both the SBIR and STTR side, there's discussion of increasing them or doubling them or ramping it slowly or going very quickly. Comments on that. There's discussion of using some of the allocation for management purposes or commercialization support purposes. And, what are your views on that? And then the participation of majority venture-owned firms as well. So take multiple choice. Take anything you want. Comment on.
Okay, I'll take the one on the management to start with, because I think that's an important element that needs to be identified and funded separately so that people know how much that is and where it's covered, rather than just assuming that it gets done somehow. So I think that's a key area. I think the award size, it probably makes some sense to increase the area that's been under discussion for a number of years. Allocation size, I guess the thought there is that, again, I think you've got to be careful how you worry about the allocation size and making sure that these things actually are proceeding on to phase, either phase twos or other avenues which can get them into infused into industry and into real products. So you've got to be careful about that.
Okay. Let me just take the set aside. I think, first of all, I would argue, from the standpoint of the National Science Foundation, that as I said before, the SBIR program is part of our overall portfolio meant to focus on innovation and development of potentially commercially viable products and processes. And so, I think we have other opportunities to invest in these kinds of activities, and obviously an increase in the set aside would simply take away from the ability to invest in those areas as well. So I think the agency should have some flexibility in terms of establishing the balance between what you invest in specific SBIR programs and what programs that may be related to business and innovation development. Award size and success rate, as you know, these are not independent knobs. You adjust one and the other is affected. So again, I think it's a question of striking that right balance, providing additional support. And as I understand it, and my colleagues from SBIR, the SBIR program at NSF are here to correct me, but there is some flexibility in requesting variance, and I think we've been able to use that to some success. So, and I would agree with the other two comments with regard to the major position that the venture capital firms can take.
State your identification, Alan.
Good. I'm with the Navy SBIR program office. This is a question for Mr. Howard. I've been here for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, I guess. But before that, I was in your old Code S, and I still read the topic solicitations from NASA regularly. And I'm always struck by the similarity between some of your topics and some of our Navy SBIR topics and also Air Force SBIR topics in particular. And so this is a question that's getting towards possible synergies, and actually it focuses on technology roadmaps and whether or not there could be, and under what circumstances there could be, some kind of sharing. We're just beginning to experiment with synergies between some of the DoD SBIR programs and your NASA SBIR program. But within DoD, particularly, I know the Navy best, in some of our PEOs, our program executive offices, there's a measure of public transparency with our technology roadmaps. And, you know, the primes and small businesses are just beginning for the first time to have access to the technology roadmaps in the acquisition programs. And I'm wondering if there were going to be an effective synergy between the DoD programs on one hand and NASA, how would you see us beginning to kind of structure that? Would you, now you're CTO, so would you go, you know, to your opposite number, which would correspond to our CTOs and our system commands, or the two gentlemen sitting up here in front have DoD-wide SBIR management responsibilities from, you know, OSBP? Structurally, how could this communication work? And if you could talk to this question about technology roadmaps, that'd be great.
Yeah. Okay. As far as structurally, I mean, that's probably in the works still and hasn't been defined in a lot of detail. However, this office, the Office of the Chief Technologist, one of the Chief Technologist's jobs and roles of this office is to be the entry point in the agency to other agencies with coordination of activities that are going on. We've started having discussions with other agencies already as far as what they're doing versus what we're doing. And so this falls right into that category where there hasn't been a single focused organization at NASA for a number of years that you could go to and say, let's have a talk about exactly what we're doing, what you're doing. And this falls right into that category, that this office is that place to do that, to have that discussion. And again, since SBIR is now a program within this larger space technology program and part of this office, it elevates it to the realization that it's just as much of one of the ones we need to talk about as far as coordination across agencies and what other agencies are doing. You bring another point up, which you talked about, you know, looking at the Code S, as it used to be called, Code S, the Science Mission Directorate topics and subtopics and tracking through those. One thing that we're going to look at, because the SBIR up till now has been pretty much focused on the topic, the needs of the mission directorates, is to also look at the balance of those against what there may be as cross-cutting or cross-discipline areas that need to be re-emphasized or focused as we look at this roadmap and say, look, this is an area we need to put more emphasis on that's across mission directorates. It's agency-wide application of things. Let's look at re-emphasizing that as part of the next call the next year.
Technology roadmaps,
we're actually, I mean, we're in the process. I mean, this office is all of, let's see, 2 months old. We're in the process of starting to stand that process up to do technology roadmaps. We've pulled together the existing roadmaps and prior roadmaps from previous years from the mission directorates as well as things that were back done as far back as 2004, so as far as technology roadmaps for the agency. And we're going to go off and identify technology areas, broad areas, like in-space propulsion or communications, and identify those and start, hopefully this summer, with workshops, engaging. This will be done not internal with NASA only. This is going to be open to everybody to be able to come and be involved in the workshops, and then pull that information together, and that will be the source of inputs into these dozen or so technical areas that will have these sub-roadmaps to them, will be the inputs that we put into a draft roadmap for the agency, technology roadmap for the agency, that addresses both what's in the cross-cutting program, what's in the space technology program, which looks across directorates, as well as what the high-level areas are and synergies within the mission directorates, and also looking at the synergies with other agencies.
And are you synchronizing those with agency budgeting processes and topic selection and allocation and solicitations and that sort of thing?
Synchronizing in terms of time?
Right.
Yeah. Again, this is the first time through this, so we're hoping to have a product that will be synced up by the time we start the next year's budget cycle. That's right.
My name is Philip Singerman. I was the head of EDA under President Clinton, and I was the founding CEO of two state-based economic development organizations in Pennsylvania and Maryland. And I have a question about your agency's openness to reconsidering a formal relationships with local tech-based economic development programs to support your SBIR commercialization. I just want to make three quick points about the context of. First, as you know, over the last quarter century, the states and regions have created very robust and sustainable tech-based economic development organizations, and many of them are represented in this room, and others in this room have probably benefited from those programs. Secondly, the White House, the NEC, and the Office of Science and Technology Policy, Tom Khalil being one of the leaders of that, have recognized the role of regional innovation clusters in supporting agency missions, and the Energy Innovation Hub, the Energy Regional Innovation Cluster announcement that DOE has on the street is an example of that. And third, I know that your agencies have in the past had such programs like the RTTC program at NASA and the State Industry University Research Program at NSF, which in one case did not work and in the other case was not funded, and you've had new programs such as the partnerships, which is a modest-sized program. So,
We got it.
Okay. Yeah. Let me take a quick crack at that, and I want to put a plug in for just to remind you that one of the programs that I did talk about very briefly was the Partnership for Innovation program, which does in fact have partnerships in some cases with local economic development programs. Not next week, but the week after, if you give me your card, I'll be sure and send it to you. There, we are having a PFI, Partnership for Innovation, workshop where we are specifically soliciting input on ideas for new areas for investment. In the proposal for the FY11 budget for NSF, there is additional support for Partnerships for Innovation, and we are very much looking to the community for ideas on how we might be able to do that. And I think, and now this predates me, but I think the lack of success in the state university industry partnership program was more because the states didn't come up with the money than it was anything else. Right. So I don't think it was the lack of interest from NSF. Right.
Yeah, I would just say there were numbers of areas in the new program that we're talking about that are opportunities for partnering with industry and regional areas, regional business areas, that are just going to be wide open for the competitive process to allow to proceed forward with that. I think that's probably the best approach within the current program, the new program that we have.
Thank you.
Arun, I and several others have questions, but I'm afraid in terms of our schedule, I have to ask the question, would you like to have lunch?
And I would, personally.
So if I may, I'd like to thank this panel for a tremendously interesting set of